G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 3b.
The new scientists, when they are investigating the object of wholeness, they not only see that this whole is a principle, but they also see, as a second aspect of that wholeness, that it is both noumenon and phenomena. That it is actually both the noumenon, namely the thing by itself, and the many, the phenomena, the many, the one principle that expresses itself in the many. That old philosophical question since time immemorial, how is it possible that the one can show itself forth in the many? That was an unsolved question, so to say, up to now. So the new scientists say, well, this whole is both noumenon and phenomena. It is both what the religionists or the theologians were understanding under the transcendental and the immanent, which Mrs. Eddy will put in other terms, that principle and its manifestation as idea. That principle is both principle and its idea is one, and this one is God, the whole. So that there is no more a question that there is a principle and somewhere else the expression of that principle as infinite phenomena, the one that becomes infinite in phenomena, but that they are one, that they are one and the same thing, just looked at from different standpoints. So that noumenon and phenomena are of the same nature, and you can see why man is the participator in the universe and participator of God, why is the image and likeness of God, why he is God's consciousness of himself. God, the one that is conscious of himself in infinite ways, therefore the infinite manifestation, the infinite phenomena. A third aspect of that wholeness, they also see that because principle and its manifestation is one, therefore all manifestations are one with each other, that there is a oneness of all the phenomena, that the phenomena are not isolated, that there are not a lot of isolated facts or ideas, or truth, but that they are all related into one. Again, that sense that if we cut the blade of grass, we shake the universe, so that we get the oneness of all the phenomena, of all the manifestations. And you hear Mrs. Eddy's work, that every idea reflects every other idea, that every idea reflects the whole of God, and by reflecting the whole of God, it reflects all other ideas. And the fourth side of wholeness is really holism, the science of wholeness, which says that this science must explain everything from the standpoint of the whole. That science must explain, I repeat, everything from the standpoint of the whole and never from the standpoint of the parts. And you can hear in between the lines, making a relationship to Christian science, that most practice which we practice are not holistic. We practice the parts. They practice the parts. We want the parts to be whole and practice the parts until they become whole, or we think they become whole. That's not Christian science. You see, the point that I want to bring out, another thing in parentheses, is that we have read the textbook mostly as a science of the old science, And today we become aware that when we read the textbook again, which we think we have read very often, on which I have been teaching now over 35 years, the structure of the textbook, that suddenly this spring I could see that I haven't really touched the groundwork of the textbook properly. That in parentheses I could say that one begins to see today that Mrs. Eddy's concept of science was a holistic concept of science, of the new science, whereas we mostly put our stress and accent on the scientific criteria of the old science, mostly. I don't say entirely, but mostly. And so this week is a week of great transformation for the students and for the student thought, a great transformation it will be, to bring the student thought out of the old concept of science when reading and thinking about Christian Science into thinking and reading the textbook from the point of view of the new science. So here we see one point that we have to make a mental note, that really the whole is that which must explain the parts, and that we always reason out from the whole, which we have done to a great degree when we were touching the 1,000-year periods and came to the 6th and to the 7,000-year period, as you have it in my booklet in the breakthrough to the 7,000-year period. There I have shown that we really are taking the standpoint of a holistic science and go out only from the whole and always from the whole and never leaving the whole in our deduction from the whole. So in this, I go back to the sciences, the new scientists, no more to Christian Science application, but to the new scientists, that they begin to see that now they will see a science that is without space and time, because it is the whole, and the whole can never be restricted by anything, cannot be restricted by space, cannot be restricted by time. Therefore, it is a science that will know the past, the present, and the future, that it will, for the future generation, very easy to know what has happened in the past, what will happen in the present, and what happens here, and what happens in the distance, what happens all over the space and time. So that we can see that every part really will contain the program of the whole. Just as they begin to see that every cell has the blueprint of the whole organ and the whole organism, so we too will have to see that man will have the program within himself for the whole. That the days of creation as the great holistic divine program is programmed into man, and that he is really containing the program of the whole evolution of being. This is something very big, because it takes us away from that sense that we have to acquire step by step, by accumulating step by step a new truth, really the final sum total of facts. No, we can go out from the point that within ourselves is the whole, and the whole program of the divine being is programmed into each one of us, and can go out from there. All right, this would be point one, Roman one, the object of investigation. You could see there are four aspects of that object. First of all, we have to see it, that object of the whole, as a principle. then second to see that that principle is noumenon and phenomena, that it is the noumenon that expresses itself as the one in infinite parts, in infinite manifestations, and third, that all manifestations, all phenomena together are constituting a oneness of phenomena, that every part is related to every other part, that there are no independent parts, no isolated parts, no isolated thoughts, no isolated acts, no isolated beings, that they are all interrelated. And fourth, to see that we can find really the explanation of everything from, only from the standpoint of wholeness, that it will be the science of all sciences. Yes. Now, this is only Roman 1. We come to Roman 2, the holistic method of investigation. How can we now investigate this Roman 1 subject, the wholeness? Do we investigate it through magic? That's what people tried to do in time past. That through magic, through rituals, they would try to become one with deity, whatever that deity may have been. What we call today primitive cultures, which may not so primitive as we think, they use magical methods to become one with the deity before they do any act, before they go hunting or so. They first make them one with deity and see exactly the target of their game when they go hunting, yes? And so they use that method. Well, later on, the mystics used the method of meditation, of mystical practices and so on, in order to be one with the whole of being. So the attempt to be one and with reality is an old, old desire of mankind. The methods did change. So instead of the methods of magic, we had then the methods of mystics and mysticism. Later on, perhaps more religious practices, combined then perhaps also with superstition, with emotion, with exorcisms and so on, with rituals, or in a refined way, the method was faith, prayer, beliefs, inspiration, perhaps also pragmatism, relying on pragmatic methods to be one with the problem and being able to solve the problem. Now, later on with the scientific age, naturally that changed, that one felt that knowledge, understanding was the method to become one with reality. So basic research was being done in the 17th century, especially 18th century, basic research to become one with reality, to see through reality. And so finally our age brought forth science as a means to investigate reality. But we have seen that science is not something that is defined once and for all, but that science is revolutionary in its very nature, that the concept of science changed constantly. And we know that from Kuhn's book on the paradigm shift in science, how he showed that science went through various paradigm shifts, always taking on a new concept of science. So we shouldn't think that we have defined science once and for all, but that we are ready to change our concept of science constantly as time goes on and as the ages demand it. So Because our consciousness cannot contain the whole and embrace the whole, because if we would be able to embrace the whole, we would have to be bigger than the whole, which is a contradiction in itself. So as we cannot embrace the whole as a whole, we must find ways and means, really, to get acquainted with the whole. We cannot embrace the whole of mathematics, but we can find out the laws of mathematics with which we can master mathematics. And so it is in science we have to see that the whole of being cannot be embraced by us, but that we can find ways and means called science with which we can master the infinite. Remember, in parentheses, how Mrs. Eddy says, the admission to oneself that man is God's own likeness. That's holistic standpoint. Man is God's own likeness. Sets man free to do what? To master the infinite idea. To master infinitude. That's a terrific statement. And that's a very holistic statement. And this is the pith of what the new scientists try to achieve. They haven't seen quite yet the method to do that, but at least they see that we cannot embrace the whole as a whole, and we do not want to embrace the whole through mysticism, through meditation. The age demands a scientific method. So they have to try out which scientific method comes nearest to a holistic approach to holism. And so the holistic science that is necessary. So as to make the whole intelligible to humans. Therefore, let's see how, therefore, we would have to define science. And here I want to have a quick run through the historical development of the scientific approach. You know that in earlier times, say in the time especially of the French encyclopedists, they had the sense of science that accumulating facts, finding facts, and finding more and more facts would be the scientific method, and so they brought out that enormous encyclopedia of the French encyclopedists, where practically every knowledge at that time was written down in many, many volumes of that encyclopedia. So that was fact-finding activity. The more facts you knew, the more you were a scientist, the higher you were a scientist. Well, that changed naturally very quickly, rapidly afterwards, so that science was defined much more as a fact-ordering activity instead of just fact-finding. Fact-ordering activity, so that order became a scientific point of investigation, and not the facts by themselves, so that we can understand the fact. Therefore, in today's life, it is not so important that we know a lot of facts, the facts we always can find in the books, but what makes a scientist is, can he order the facts so that they make sense, or that they make new sense? And if they make new sense, he says, I have discovered something new. So it was a fact arranging or fact ordering activity. You see that well expressed in the old dictionaries when we read the definitions of science, like in Funk and Wagnall's define science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in a system. You can see this was the definition that we have taken up to now as being basic and guiding for our investigation of Christian Science. That the definition that science is a knowledge, but a knowledge not just accumulation of knowledge, but reduced to law, therefore brought into kind of order, into kind of relationships, and embodied then in a whole system, in a system, so that all these findings were ordered into a system that was in a system that was complete, in a complete system. And on that basis we were working most of the time. I said most of the time, not always. Somehow without knowing it, we were passing that sense of science from quite early, without noticing that we did something that was surpassing or that was overforming that old concept of science. Because we already were seeing another definition of science, like the Oxford Dictionary, that says science includes also trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truths within its own domain. So we could also see that it is not just taking knowledge and putting it into a system, but that that system has within itself the seed within itself, that science is creative, that science is developing from within itself, and therefore can bring forth new concepts, just like Kuhn then showed it, that there is a paradigm, and that paradigm comes up against an anomaly, which they can't explain, and then comes here and there somebody who tries to explain that anomaly and finds an extraordinary science, a no more ordinary science, that makes a paradigm shift and brings forth a completely new concept of science. But lately, when one tries to find definition of science in the new scientist, one finds quite different definitions. And you see it at once that they indicate a holistic definition of science. For instance, the philosopher Peter Kaws, C-A-W-S, he defines science already as the totality of experience into a coherent whole. So you can see it must be put into a coherent whole, so that the concept of holism enters now. That it says a science that is a closed system, which does not take into consideration its environment, that does not take into consideration the observer that is outside the system, that looks at the system, that thinks about the system, is actually not a holistic concept of science. Only when it is put into a whole, then it can be considered as a science. Or let's take Bronowski, who has always been considered as a very advanced thinker in the scientific field. He defines, among other science, as science has to do with the relations which the fact have with the whole. Now, up to now, it was to consider the facts, the relationship of facts with facts, the relationship between parts and parts, how they are related, what is the mechanism, the lawful mechanism that governs parts with parts. But now he comes and says that science has to do with the relations of the parts with the whole. Therefore, only then, when something has its right place within the whole, then it can be considered as being a new definition of science. So let's just be aware that science really undergoes revolutions. That we don't have to think that what we learned in school 50 years ago, that was the kind of science that is still science. It isn't anymore. It changes, and it changes very rapidly. So that science is revolutionary in its very nature. It's very dynamic. There is a self-dynamic in science. Science has within itself the ability to evolve itself, to have the seed within itself. It's not something static, it's something very organic, something very alive, because only that which has life can change. And so, and how does it change? It's, we see that that science has its own logicity, its own logic. Science does not develop according to our logic. That's what we like to see, that we want to extrapolate the past into the future and say what the future has to bring to us. What will happen in the future? In which way technology, in which way physical science, biological science will develop? Nobody knows. Science has its own logicity. That is an acknowledged fact in the new sciences. And we have given various examples for that, so that we can see the person of the scientist is not important, because the person does not evolve science. Science evolves science. It is not Mrs. Eddy that evolved science. It's not just John Dawley that evolved science. It's not Max that evolved science. It's science itself that evolves itself. That we must see. And people are very secondary. If somebody is not a transparent for the idea, somebody else will have to be the transparent for the development, because the idea of science is stronger than people. And when the idea of science evolves itself, it finds its ways and means to evolve itself. Either it finds people that are transparent for it, or it gives help to the people. It gives help to the universe. That's another way how the Christ idea works, and how the idea of science itself works and says, I have ways and means of evolving myself. So nobody can stop science. Nobody can stop evolution. People can't stop it. A dogma can't stop it. You see, communism can't stop science. You have that wonderful example with communism, that communism cannot stop science. Well, Russia tried to stop Einstein. It said, we don't accept the theory of relativity because it goes against the material concept of material history. So we can't accept Einstein's theory of relativity. They had finally to accept it in 1953 or 4, very late, you see, 50 years after, they had to accept it because they built the atom bomb. And they couldn't build the atom bomb without Einstein's theory. They had to. The same thing happened over with cybernetics. Russia didn't want to accept cybernetics because it goes against the material historical sense of Marxism and Leninism. But they had to because they needed the computers. So finally they accepted cybernetics. That was only about 2 decades ago. You see, science is bigger than politics, science is bigger than military undertakings, science is bigger than anything. And on that we can rely. Sorry, I have to stop here.